Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are wrestling with a narrative that just won't go away in the U.S. conservation world.
Oh, yeah. The decline of the American hunt.
Exactly. And it's not just, you know, a nostalgic thing. This is a critical funding concern. These hunting licenses, the taxes, they basically underpin state wildlife management.
It's the existential question for conservation, really. If those numbers are actually plummeting, then the entire financial model for taking care of wildlife is, well, it's in jeopardy.
Right. But we've heard this story for years, and it's often fueled by maybe one or two data points. We have to ask, is this based on fact or is it more fear? So our mission today is to cut through all that speculation. We're diving into a really specific objective survey from the American Hunting Lease Association. It queries the hunters themselves.
Correctly. About their access, their satisfaction, what they're actually doing.
Yeah, we want the real picture, what's happening on the ground.
And to really get why there was this panic, we have to start with the data that kicked it all off. That was the 2016 National Survey. You know the one. From the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the USFWS.
So what did that report actually state that made everyone sound the alarms?
Well, the headline number, it showed a decline from 13.7 million hunters back in 2011. Down to 11.5 million in 2016. That's a drop of over 2 million people. Of course, that's going to create shockwaves.
Of course. But if you actually go and read the report, you find this crucial little footnote that kind of undermines the whole collapse story.
That's the one. The agency itself, they explicitly noted that this specific decline, and this is for both hunter numbers and total spending, was, and I'm quoting here, not statistically significant.
Not statistically significant.
Meaning it could just be noise. A fluctuation.
Yeah.
On top of that, the 2011 survey actually showed an increase over the one before it. So assuming this one drop was a definite downward trend, it's probably jumping the gun. The whole foundation of the fear was a little shaky from day one.
And what's just as fascinating from that same USFWS data is the economics of it all.
Oh, yeah.
In 2016, hunting activities accounted for a staggering $25.6 billion in spending. Let's just put that number in perspective for you.
That's roughly the GDP of a small European country. It's a huge committed investment.
Right.
And when you break down where that money is going, only a tiny fraction is for licenses or fees or even direct land access payments.
Yeah, the report found that 84% of that total was spent on everything else.
Everything else.
Equipment, travel, gear, all the specialized clothing, lodging.
And the implication there is profound. It tells us that the hunter is already funding their commitment and at a really high level.
So if they're willing to spend a ton on a new scope or a trip halfway across the country,
then the cost of access, while it's an issue for some people, clearly isn't stopping the really committed hunter from investing heavily in the whole lifestyle.
Okay, so let's unpack who this modern hunter is. The one who's investing so much. We'll use the American Hunting Lease Association survey for this. We need to go past just the demographics and look at, you know, what really motivates them.
And what jumps out right away is just the depth of their commitment.
How so?
90% of the people they surveyed see hunting as either a serious passion, that's half of them right there, or they frame it almost like a religion, a birthright I will protect. That was 40%.
So this is not a casual weekend hobby.
Not at all. It's a deep emotional dedication.
But this is where we had a really interesting paradox. Despite all that passion, when they were asked their primary reason for hunting, only 13% said it was to feed their family.
Right. Instead, a huge majority, 76%, said their main goal is just to enjoy the outdoors and consider it a bonus if I'm successful.
It's the experience.
It's the experience, the ritual, the lifestyle. It's not about the outcome.
That is such a critical distinction. It means the success rate doesn't actually dictate whether they participate or not.
Exactly. If a hunter is, say, financially stable, they can afford to prioritize that feeling of being out there over actually bringing home a deer. And that completely changes their approach.
And this all lines up with the demographics, right?
It really does. The model hunter in this survey is, well, pretty traditional. 97% are men. 57% are between 45 and 64. They're married.
Stable income.
Stable income. 63% reported a household income between 50 and 150,000 a year. They're also experienced. 84% have been hunting for over 20 years.
And they're not quitting. Their commitment isn't waning. The survey found 81% said the time they spend hunting has either stayed the same or even increased in the last 5 years.
These are not people leaving the woods.
No.
And one last thing. The regional snapshot here really matters. 55% of the people who answered were in the Southeast.
And why is that so important?
Because unlike the Midwest or the Northeast, the Southeast has this long history, almost a century, of big timber companies leasing out huge tracts of land. Access there is often transactional. It's established. It's just how things are done.
That regional focus is a perfect setup for what's next, how these hunters are actually getting on the land. So let's look at the main ways they access it.
The headline here is really simple.
Yeah.
This whole group basically lives on private land.
Okay.
The top two categories are both private access. The biggest group, 53%, primarily uses private land where they compensate the landowner, a hunting lease.
More than half. Just right there. What about the rest?
Then you have private land with no compensation. You know, the traditional handshake hunt. That was 30%.
So that's most of them.
That's 83% right there on some form of private property, paid or not. Public land only accounted for 14% of the primary access and 12% hunt land they own themselves.
Let's dig into that majority then, the 53% on leases. Is this like a casual year-to-year thing?
It's far from it. These are really long-term stable arrangements. 62% of those leasing have been doing it for 10 years or more.
Wow.
And we're not talking about small plots. 52% lease tracts that are bigger than 400 acres. This is an embedded institutional part of their hunting life.
And the satisfaction level with this paid model, I mean, it's just off the charts for any kind of consumer survey.
It's almost unbelievable. 98% agree, or strongly agree, that they are satisfied and they fully intend to lease again.
Universal approval, almost.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And the cost shows you why it works. 85% of these leases cost less than $20 an acre.
That's affordable.
Very. 46% pay between $10 and $20, and 39% pay less than $10 an acre.
Which is an easy line item in the budget for that stable demographic we were just talking about.
Right. The only place costs creep up is the Midwest, where about a quarter of them reported paying between $20 and $30 an acre, which probably just reflects the habitat quality there.
So the leasing model, where it's established, it just flat out works.
It does. It solves the access problem because it aligns the landowner's financial interest with the hunter's need for, you know, guaranteed exclusive habitat.
Okay, now let's pivot to that other big group, the 30% who rely on free private access, the handshake hunt.
Right.
Their satisfaction is also through the roof. 85% rated their experience as excellent or above average.
And this is a privilege that's really earned through trust and community. 58% say their access is exclusive just for them and their small group.
And how do they get it?
A massive 81% got access simply because they already knew the landowner. It's the ultimate network benefit.
But this high trust, low cost system has a huge blind spot. Really high stakes one. And this is where it gets interesting.
It really does. Despite how happy everyone is, 61% of these handshake hunters and their landowners, they haven't addressed legal protection or liability insurance.
61%.
Yeah. 41% said the landowner never even brought it up, and 19% just admitted they'd never even heard of hunting liability insurance.
So you have this incredibly trusting relationship defining a third of the hunting access in the survey, but the majority are operating with zero legal safety net.
That's an enormous risk. If an accident happens, it could destroy that relationship and jeopardize that free access for everyone else. It shows that while the trust is high, the understanding of the legal risks is, well, it's dangerously low.
Okay, finally, let's turn to public land, the primary spot for 14% of these hunters. Access is easy, geographically 65%, drive less than 50 miles. But how do they feel about the experience?
Well, 73% are at least mostly satisfied, so they aren't miserable. But there's a clear desire for something more exclusive.
Yeah.
46% said they'd prefer that.
But here's the key part that really pushes back on that narrative about public land being too crowded.
Right. Only 1% of public land hunters said they actually stopped hunting because of hunting pressure.
1%.
They might wish for more solitude, but the crowds are not driving them out of the sport.
And are they open to other options?
Very. 44% of them have leased land in the past, or even leased some now, and another 28% would definitely consider it. Their barrier isn't philosophical. It's all about perceived economics.
They think it costs too much.
Exactly. 57% believe leases are too expensive for average hunters, even though, as we just saw, most leases are actually under $20 an acre.
So what we have is a highly satisfied long-term hunter base. They've pretty much solved their own access problems, mostly through private deals. If this core group is doing so well, why does this narrative of decline and crisis just keep going?
Well, we need to look at what the hunters themselves think the problem is.
Okay.
When they were asked the main reason for the decline in participation, 56% blamed a culture shift away from hunting.
A culture shift, not access.
Not access. Only 34% blamed the more traditional answer, which is lack of access to quality habitat.
And that perception that it's a cultural shift, that's critical because it tells us that hunters see the problem coming from outside their community.
Right. They see it as a failure of society to value the tradition, not just a failure of, say, land management or some policy.
They also seem to view leasing as more than just a transaction.
Very much so. They see it as a conservation tool. 58% believe leasing will play a vital role in the future by providing that access to good habitat.
And they understand the value of the land itself. 46% believe landowners deserve market value.
They're pragmatic. They acknowledge the landowner's expenses, their right to charge a fair market fee. It's a very modern way of looking at stewardship.
And they connect the dots to conservation.
They do. 46% believe that committing to a hunting lease is the single best way for a landowner to make money and therefore not sell the land for development.
So leasing becomes the ultimate habitat preservation tool.
The economic engine of leasing is seen as a shield against suburban sprawl.
Okay, now we get to what might be the biggest contradiction in this whole survey, and it speaks directly to the future of the sport, the mentoring paradox.
This is the real aha moment of this whole deep dive, I think.
So respondents were asked, what's the biggest barrier keeping new hunters from getting into the sport?
And the overwhelming choice at 65% was overall lack of direction.
Lack of direction. Newcomers feel totally lost. They don't know where to even start. Startup costs were a distant second at 22%.
Right. So new hunters need a map, basically. They don't need free gear. They need guidance.
But then right after that, the survey asked if the person answering had mentored at least one new hunter in the last 3 years.
And 77% of them said yes.
Yes, they had. They had.
Yeah.
So let's pause on that for a second. We have a huge majority of dedicated, experienced hunters who are actively one-on-one mentoring people. Mm-hmm. But the potential newcomers still feel this crippling, generalized lack of direction. What is the disconnect here?
I think the challenge isn't the willingness to mentor. The individual effort is clearly there.
The vast majority are extending a hand.
They are. The problem seems to be the lack of a formalized, visible, scalable pipeline. The individual effort, even though it's sincere, it might be too insular, it's focused on family or friends, their immediate network.
So Sally from the city who has zero family ties to hunting.
Exactly. She doesn't see those individual mentorships happening.
Mm.
So to her, she still feels totally directionless.
It was not a motivation failure. It's a structural failure. The system is failing to translate all that individual enthusiasm into an institutional, welcoming entry point for a new generation.
So to kind of sum up this whole dive, the data really presents a picture that runs counter to that prevailing, almost alarmist narrative.
Right.
What we have is a passionate, experienced, and highly satisfied hunting corps. They're mostly accessing private land and doing it effectively through leases or handshakes. The perceived decline isn't even statistically significant, and the commitment among the people who are currently participating is actually going up.
It's a complex problem. The cost of access isn't the main spending barrier, but the perception of cost stops public land users from even considering a lease.
And the biggest systemic problem they identified isn't habitat. It's not money. It's a failure to give clear direction to new hunters, even though almost everyone is out there mentoring someone one-on-one.
The high satisfaction with exclusive access and the general feeling that a culture shift is the problem. It suggests the hunting community feels pretty confident in its own ability to find and manage land.
Yeah, but they're struggling to bridge that divide between their own passionate subculture and the wider society.
So we'll leave you with this final provocative thought to explore on your own. If 65% of potential new hunters feel a significant overall lack of direction, but 77% of current hunters are actively mentoring others, what kind of organizational or structured changes, what formalized pipeline or visible public programs would be required to transform all this high individual efforts into a scalable, welcoming direction for the next generation of hunters?